Great. So thank you for the invitation. And so most of you got a handout. I don't know, there weren't enough because the printer decided that half the handouts would come out looking pretty and the other half the handouts would come out like without good tech fonts. But right, so you've probably glanced it over. You know what I'm going to say. You can go back to your computers now. So my talk is on maybe a topological version of spin statistics. I think the title I put was Spin Statistics. And categorified. Galois groups. And it's very fun for me to speak about this here because this was my answer when I was, so when I was here a few months ago, Davide was pressing me for what sort of a pure mathematician in TFTs think. So I should apologize. I think it's standard in seminars like this to apologize if you're a mathematician. So I don't have slides. But Davide was asking me less when I was visiting the most recent time what I thought spin statistics was, and I didn't have an answer for him then. So this is my answer to what I think spin statistics is. So I have sort of two goals for the talk. So the main goal is to tell you, right, so to tell you what sort of maybe I should say a homotopy theoretic reason for spin statistics. Statistics. And a sub-goal is I want to tell you a little bit about sort of about some version maybe of relative field theories that helps to explain this. So a simple case would of what Dan calls relative field theories, or what might be called anomalous field theories. And so I think by now it's very familiar, the general sort of idea that for how mathematicians like to sort of take it, well, what we take as a definition of what quantum field theory is. And I think that this was an idea that maybe originated with Atiyah and that Dan kind of really emphasized for sort of a fully extended field theory picture. So, okay, Graham Segal, great. Okay, there are a lot of important names. Yes, definitely Witten, definitely Segal, definitely Lorentz in the math, for some early examples. So the idea is the following. So just to remind, the idea is that if you want to study. So the idea is that maybe you say you have you say you have say you want to study so say you want to study field theories. I mean, but for me, field theory. Okay, I'm going to do some terrible thing. I'm going to use the word field both for quantum field theory and also for field in the sense of algebra. And I hope that you'll just be able to tell from the context what I mean. So say you want to study field theories with some that require some geometry. So maybe you want to study Riemannian field theories. I don't really care what type of geometry you want for your purposes for what I'm about to say. So I'll let G be the geometry for. So maybe this is like Riemannian field theory. Field theories for geometry G. Then you're supposed to do three things. the first thing you're supposed to do, so the first thing you're supposed to do is you're supposed to build, oh, and I should be in some dimension. So what people have said for now a while is that the first thing you're supposed to do is build an infinity n category board ng of kind of G geometric cobordisms. The next thing you're supposed to do, and I'm not saying that you can do any of these with current technology, I'm saying what the proposal was from a while back. The next thing you're supposed to do is build, so this is sort of something that only depended on G. This is probably something that's kind of something you do once and for all. You build an infinity n category. Every time I say, I probably mean symmetric monoidal, and I'm going to just not even write that. The experts know how to fill that in, and the non-experts don't care about that. So you build an infinity n category, maybe something like vect n of, that's some sort of higher enhancement of vector spaces. So this is what, this is, I mean, maybe idea or wish list. And the third thing you do is that you have your quantum field theory you want to study, you want to, I don't know any quantum field theories, but I've been sitting in this conference and I hear all these words of various quantum field theories that all of you are talking about. So whatever quantum field theory it is you want to study, what you're supposed to do is build a functor. So, and this is the part that uses the actual quantum field theory. So this just depended on the geometry. This you do is sort of pure algebra. You do it once and for all. And then you build a functor from board ng to vect n, which encodes the data of the quantum field theory. I mean, maybe you should call this like the partition functor. Dan, did you use that word in your paper? That would have been a good word to use, because at the top dimension, it's supposed to be the partition function.
It's going to be very confusing. Getting a lot of stuff is not a good function, like Hilbert
space. Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so as a mathematician, I would say that this is the definition of the quantum field theory, that it's, by definition, a quantum field theory is, for this geometry, is such a functor. But, and I'm speaking as an outsider. My impression is that in physics, the idea is that quantum field theories are something that exist, and that we're trying to write mathematical models that maybe tell you everything about the quantum field theory. And so then I would say that this is a mathematical model of the quantum field theory. As a mathematician, certainly, this is my definition, except it's not a definition, because all three of these are really hard. So I will not discuss this at all. Pretty much. I will say one word about this, which is that at least in algebraic settings, I think that we're close, but certainly this hasn't been done yet. And I'd like to talk a little bit about this. Yes, so what do I mean by G geometric cobordisms? So what I mean is that the K-morphisms, so the idea is that the K-morphisms should be K-dimensional cobordisms with a germ, a little neighborhood around them, germ of n-dimensional G-geometric manifold around them, G-manifold. So in, say, the Riemannian case, the idea is that, like, say, a one-morphism, so it would be some curve, but then I might have a little bit of neighborhood around it that just has a little bit of top-dimensional Riemannian structure. And you want that so that you can imagine that you could do gluings together. Otherwise, there's no way to smoothly glue Riemannian manifolds together. And the major problem right now, the main obstruction to doing one seems to be that for most geometries, there doesn't seem right now to be a way to do this as a unital category. A way to handle, to really handle units. In board NG. There's sort of things you can do, but they sort of don't produce unital categories. But you can win when the local geometry G is sufficiently topological. No.
I mean, for example, in this analytic analytic continuation picture, I get the unitary thing, which is this real time, the Kowski space is the boundary, but it's not really part of it.
Yes,
so I think you really want the contraction off there.
Right.
It's not clear you really want.
That would be a great way to maybe fix the problem. I'm not aware of a theory of infinity n categories that's non-unital. It seems that at least right now, all of our kind of notions of infinity n category, the units are really playing an important role in helping to control the coherences. And so that's, I mean, yet. So in an infinity n category, it's like an N category. There's zero morphisms up to N morphisms. But nowhere in the construction do you actually use sets. There's not a set of N morphisms or a set of zero morphisms. In an infinity N category, those are always homotopy types. They're always sort of infinity groupoids. And so then you might have composition that's, say, associative up to homotopy. And you need to be able to control the, like, so you have the higher coherences tell you that kind of different associative structures are the same, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, maybe someone will come up with a model of non-unital infinity n category, and then maybe we'd be able to do this. But it's not, we don't have the technology to do that yet.
Okay, so then the notion of the infinity category alone without a static coordinate.
Ah, this is great. So you could ask, I think you're asking for what would these days be called an infinity-infinity category. So there's a really fun story. There's a theorem of Barwick and Schomer-Preis that says that the notion of infinity n category is essentially unique. We by now know exactly what infinity n categories are for any n. And it turns out that there are exactly two different distinct versions of infinity-infinity category. And no reason yet to preference one over the other. So the versions are distinguished by in one of the versions, if you have an infinitely dualizable object, it's invertible. And in the other version, it's not necessarily invertible. So I don't know. You should decide if you think that infinite dualizability is the same as invertibility or not. And that will tell you which of the two versions you want to use. Yeah, if you wanted to do infinite dimensional quantum field theory, you would have to make that decision. So let me tell you how at least to do this, and I'll sort of say what you should try to do in general. So in his very famous paper, Lurie, and I should say kind of, well, constructed, and I want to modify that in a moment, but anyway, Lurie kind of outlined a construction A category in which the local structure is just having a smooth structure. So no local degrees of freedom, just a smooth structure. And I want to give credit to this has been fully worked out. By Damien Kallak and Claudia Scheinbauer. And so I think their paper is now should be the sort of standard reference for the construction of Bourdin smooth.
So the manifest no orientation?
No orientation or anything. These are just smooth, but nothing else manifolds. I mean, Lurie constructed a lot of various things, but I want to focus on that one. And then if you choose a local geometry, so the idea is the following. So the choice of G, well, you can encode it as the following. So if you have a Bourdism, I think that picture appears in every math talk on TQFT, then what you can do is you can write down kind of the set or the space. I'll write G of, if I have sort of, I'll write G of M for the space of G structures on M. And there's restriction maps to the values of the space of G structures on the boundary. So I mean, the whole construction uses little collars. So this is a false picture. I should have drawn little collars. The whole construction is built out of collars. Everything, the thing about the current constructions of Bourdin smooth is that they are built with n-dimensional manifolds everywhere. There's like, you actually never use any manifold that's not of dimension n to construct this. But if you want to talk about like a point, you talk about that as manifolds of dimension n that's fibered over Rn. And so, of course, the fibers are all points and are all essentially the same. So anyway, there's restriction maps. And under reasonable conditions, well, I wouldn't say, you know, somehow, if you want to talk about local geometries, if G is a local structure, a local geometry, I think anything that you would call a geometry should have the property that if you glue two manifolds together, then the G structures on the total space should be the fiber product of the G structures on the pieces. So this is some sort of Meyer via torus or some sort of everything is homotopy theory for me. Fibered products mean homotopy fibered products for the experts. If you're not an expert, you don't care, and if I just won't anyway. So if you would expect that compositions of Lagrange of cobordisms should go to composition, so this is what's called a span. A span is just any kind of space with two maps down to other spaces. And this is the composition of spans. So if I have some way out here in 0 and 2, and so the local structure gives you a functor from cobordisms to spans. And it's not quite a functor. It's a non-unital functor unless this is, I should make a remark. This is a, to make for this to be a unital functor, that's where I need this kind of top, sort of condition of top being topological. What I need is that the G structures on some, I'll draw a picture. If I have some manifold, yeah. So if I have, I'll just say this in words. If I have a big manifold, the deformation retracts onto a smaller manifold along kind of embeddings. I want the G structures on the big thing to be the same as the G structures on the smallest thing. So sort of if I Yeah, so really what I want to say is that, yeah, so I want G structures of kind of deformation retracts.
Are there any familiar geometries that are not visible in this
area? Embeddings. No, I mean, this is basically, if G is a stack in the ATEL set, then it'll satisfy this. And so what I'm asking is that I'm asking that that the ATEL site's a topological site, you know, is enriched in topological spaces, and I want G to be continuous for that enrichment. That's the second condition. So what I want is that what I actually want is that the embedding of, so I want G to map embeddings to to equivalences in whatever target I'm in. So if you're willing to just take like the homotopy type of Riemannian metrics, well, that's no data at all. And so if you actually want to do Riemannian field theory, what you're telling me is you want the space of Riemannian metrics maybe as an analytic object and not as a homotopy type. And then embeddings don't go to isomorphisms.
Well, here, I would just say that you have to glue the geometries along colors.
Yeah, so to handle compositions, that works fine. It should work fine. I'm not aware of a really good theory of even non-unital functors in higher categories. But to make it, I know how to make an actual honest functor if I can both, if I'm both a stack so that I can handle compositions and also have this extra homotopical nature. So, now a trivial observation. So here's a trivial observation. The data of a manifold M, kind of, and a G structure on M. Well, this is the same as the data of a manifold M. And I'm just unpacking what this means. I'm not doing anything deep. I take a manifold M. I look at the space of G structures. And I pick a point in that space. That's all I did. So this is some homotopy type, some space or some set. And there's a category of pointed spaces. Pointed spaces. And what I'm saying is that the G structured manifolds is the pullback of pointed spaces over spaces along the functor G. That was just encoding what it meant to be a G structured manifold. So now let me say this in terms of cobordisms. So what I said over there but didn't actually write down was that for nice G, say for these like topological stacks, so for nice G, I'm going to do the physicist convention of time going up for a moment. For nice G, you can look at the category of cobordisms. I'm going to not write the word smooth. For me, board N is always going to mean board N smooth. And the functor G gave you sort of the notion of local structure took you from board N G to something I'm going to call kind of the category of N-fold spans. So this is the infinity n category of n-fold spans of spaces. So the objects, those are just spaces. The one morphisms are spans of spaces that look like that. the two morphisms are spans of spaces. So you, if you want a morphism from some, if you want a two morphism from some span to some other span, you put another span in the middle, and then you ask that those squares commute. And you continue that n fold times. And I should give some credit. This is outlined, everything is outlined in Lurie's paper, and the details are in a paper by Hagson. But, and then you could do the same thing, but not with spaces, but with pointed spaces. And you could take the fibered product. And that's as good a definition as you're going to get. It matches any other definition you might want. Pointed spaces are spaces equipped with a point. I mean, it's a space and an element of that, just a pick your point somewhere.
And this, what happens to the point under the spans?
The point has to go to the point. A map of pointed spaces should be a continuous map that takes the point to the point.
I wonder whether this is a fun using some kind of category way to describe the structure of a space.
Absolutely. I'm saying that one way I can talk about spaces with some particular structure is that I can that if I have a notion of spaces, maybe I've organized them into cobordisms, but I could have organized them some other way. And then I should organize the notion of structure into a functor. And then the notion of spaces with that structure is always given by a pullback square.
So can I describe this kind of structure, just to say, we pick the triangulation for space?
That's a perfectly good structure, although it's not that local.
I see. So here you want to have something better than triangulation, keep a more local and also keep a smooth structure.
Yeah, I mean, I think there might be ways to even work with triangulations in this setting.
Nice.
Certainly, if you kind of if you know how to take your structure and restrict it to open sets, and get sort of a structure on that open set, then that's good enough. So there's one other going, 20% slower than I wanted. So there's one other observation that that you can read off. So what was a field theory? Well, I still have it up there. So a field theory should assign something to every G-structured space. A field theory assigns something to every G-structured space. So the data of a G-geometric field theory, so like that. So a G-geometric field theory, G-structured, maybe I should say. Well, what was that? That took every manifold with a G structure. And assigned it to something, some vector space, some object of some category, something. In vect n. But I could think of this just by kind of, rethinking about what I'm doing. I could say this is the same as an assignment that only takes in the manifold M. So I'm doing, in computer science, this is called currying. This is a function of two variables. It takes in the manifold M and the choice of G structure. And I'm thinking of it as something that takes in the manifold M and gives you a function of G structures. So it could take the manifold M and give you a bundle over G of M, kind of things in vect M. So I hope that was totally clear. But now this lets me think of this in a slightly different way. What this lets me think of is the following. So I want to say this, and then I'll do two examples. So what this, I can say this in yet another way. I can say that this is the same, this is a functor. I want to make sure that these bundles, I want to encode the kind of composition rules. So I can say that this is a functor from the unoriented Bordism category to, well, we already had the functor G that went from the unoriented Bordism category to spans of spaces. And I'm going to build a category. I'm not write a functor yet. I'm going to build a category which, in the literature, this is also, you can find this in Habsing's paper, written as spaces with local systems in Vecten. So let me say what this is. So the words that I'm supposed to say are, these are the spans of spaces with a local system in Vecten. So it's exactly what I want for whatever like bundles of things, if you keep track of dimensions. So an object is a space with a bundle of objects in vect n. A one morphism is a span of spaces with a bundle of one morphisms in vect n. A two morphism is a span of spans with a bundle of two morphisms on it. So my spaces are all homotopy types. So the only types of bundles I have are local systems on them. So bundles and local systems are the same for my purposes. And so what that data is it consists of a lift of maps. And if you've thought about relative quantum field theories, and I know at least one of you has, you should think of this guy as being the thing you're relative to. So this is an example, an almost classical example, because this functor is kind of just in spaces. There's nothing quantum about this guy. So it's an example of a relative quantum field theory, of an unoriented relative quantum field theory, because I'm basing it on Bord. So unoriented relative quantum field theory, where G is the twist or the anomaly. And the lift, I mean, is the actual relative theory.
It's not valued in vector spaces, it's valued in like G structures.
Yes, so like G is valued in spans of spaces. So really what you should probably, this is an example. If you want to fit it into the framework that Dan and Constantine wrote down, what you would have to do is you'd have to take this guy and do some sort of free linearization to make it into something in vect n plus 1. But then whatever the free linearization of a space should be, it should be the category of bundles on that space. I mean, the free linearization that like should be the space of functions on that space, that kind of thing.
Should I think of this slab? Like physics would be that, n-dimensional theory with that global symmetry G.
Absolutely. That's it. All I'm doing is that, but kind of in you know, homotopical generality.
And could you say that the partition function of that n plus one dimensional theory is the velocity of this local system?
I mean, I could not, because I don't quite know what partition function should mean in physics.
I mean, like, if you did your free linearization, you would assign some number to n plus one manifolds that.
Yes. So
there were loops, like a twist.
You mean the linearization of this guy? Yeah, that sounds about right. Mm-hmm. I'd have to like count carefully to make sure I'm getting my category dimensions, but if you can do that count, then I believe you. I'd rather not do the count on the board. Okay. So I'll have to speed up a little bit. Okay, so this is sort of the abstract nonsense. So let me now give some examples. Well, no, let me mention one more piece of abstract nonsense. So there's this very famous theorem of Jacobs called the cobordism hypothesis, which lets you study topological field theories totally locally. It says that functors says that functors out of board N are the same in a precise sense as well, if you have a functor out of board N, you can look at what it does to a point. Unoriented board N, the point really is a little bit of Rn, and so you need to know what it does to sort of ways to move Rn around. Up to homotopy, there's only orthogonal group N ways of moving Rn around. So functors out of board N are this, functors, you know, Z out of board N are the same as the value of Z of a point as a module for the orthogonal group. This is a very deep theorem in general. This is a theorem about smooth manifolds. It tells you that if you cut a smooth manifold, if you choose Morse functions to cut a smooth manifold into handles, there's some different Morse functions might give you different descriptions of the manifold. There's some obvious relations, like handle cancellation and handle slides. The theorem says that there are no non-obvious relations. So it's like a statement that there's no syzygies in some algebraic setting. So this is a very deep theorem in general. In the case of the classical field theories, it's obvious, it's immediate. So let me just tell you what the field theory is. So in one direction it was just evaluation. Yes, so in this direction it's evaluation. So for field theories into spans of spaces. Sorry, this is false as stated. I'm sorry. I messed up. The quartism hypothesis says that was correct for spans of spaces. The quartism hypothesis says that you evaluate at a point and you get something. So I should say functors Z from board N to some other target are classified. Well, you take the value of a point, and I'm going to write the following, and then I'll explain what I mean. Z of a point should be as an object in the category of O and fixed points in C. So the implicit assertion, and really I'm going to not say the words fully dualizable. If you know those words, you know how to put them in. So the implicit assertion is that On acts sort of at the level of categories on every, some finiteness conditions, infinity n category. And so what I mean by this is that if I have, so when I say I'm in a fixed point, so this is the fixed points for the action. So what I mean by that is that if I have an element in On, and then I should have an isomorphism. So the data of a fixed point, in homotopy theory, everything is data and there are no properties. To be a fixed point is more than just being a point. You need to tell me how it's fixed. So for every G, I need to give you an isomorphism between G action on Z of a point and Z of a point. And for every pair of G, I need these isomorphisms to be compatible, and so on and so on. OK. So the point is that in spans of spaces, it turns out that the On action here on spans of spaces is trivial. And so if you unpack what this means when you have the trivial action, then I'm just saying that for every g, I need to choose an isomorphism from, well, this is the trivial action, so it's just to choose an isomorphism from the value in a point to itself compatibly. So that's an On module in spans of spaces. So now let me describe that for you. I stop at like quarter till, because I started at quarter till. Okay. Well, then I'll have to say things very quickly. Now, let me just say that. I will let you ask me for an example later for how to do that, the other direction of that construction. That part of it, the classical part, is something you can just do explicitly. So now I want to tell you kind of the whole point. So the point is that let me start actually talking about examples. So let me start as the first example, which is where my local structure is to have an orientation. So then what you can do is you can look at G of a point. Well, there are of course two orientations of the point exactly. And the ON action is just by the sine of the determinant. So what you do is, I mean, what I mean is that ON maps by the sine of the determinant to Z mod 2. This is a universal thing. I mean, this is just the group of connected components of ON. And this action, and this is as a Z mod 2 module, is the trivial Z mod 2 torso. So if I want to talk about oriented field theories, the point is that the basic meaning of being an oriented field theory had to do with two things. I chose to go to the set of connected components of ON, and then I chose to take the trivial torso for Z mod 2. And that's what I assigned to a point. And that data fully tells you what an oriented field theory is. I just had to tell you that much data. So on my handout, I gave a chart, which was the point of what I was actually should have started with, which is that my punchline, I said I was going to tell you about spin statistics, and I'm starting with orientations. My punchline for the talk is the following. Let me just tell you now, because then I'll run out of time. So, and then I'll come back to this. So the punchline for the talk, I meant to say this first, because you should always give the punchlines before the joke. So my punchline for the talk is that if you're in kind of zero categories, then you can take the real numbers, and their algebraic closure is C. And you can take orientations or compare that to unitary field theory. And in one categories, the analogous thing is you take real vector spaces embedded into complex supervector spaces and spin structures and spin statistics. OK, so what I'm going to try to do quickly is to tell you all of these, how this grid makes sense. Sorry? I will explain. I will try to explain by example. I've told you what orientations are. So now let me tell you about unitarity, and then I'll tell you about spin, and I'll tell you about statistics. And hopefully the stories I tell will be sufficiently analogous that you'll just believe that this table summarizes a deep analogy. So, oh, shoot, I'm erasing it. OK. So this was the story I'm just starting to erase about local structures was all well and good. But it only worked so far, the way I set it up, if kind of what my local structure was valued in was a homotopy type. But we know that local structures have more data than that. That like you can vary local structures in continuous families that don't count as like homotopy equivalences. Right? I mean, the field theories for different value, if you have parameters that you can adjust in your field theory, sometimes you want to treat the different things that you get as you adjust that parameter as equivalent. But sometimes you actually want to know that that's an algebraic family of field theories and not a homotopical family of field theories. So the way that in mathematics you set that up is that what you can do is you can take some, so I want to talk about what do I want to talk about? I want to talk about, for instance, field theories where the space of local structures has algebraic degrees of freedom, where I can allow myself algebraic families of local structures. So to say that is what I can do is I can take the, so what do I mean by algebraic families? I mean families parameterized. Yeah. So I want a notion of local structure in which you can have families parameterized by objects in algebraic geometry, parameterized algebraically. Say, and for me, I'm going to just work over the real numbers, say by real affine schemes. Affine schemes over R. So there's a good way to say this. What you do is you say, is you, everywhere I wrote spaces before, everywhere in the previous discussion that I wrote spaces, you cross that out and you put the word stacks over R. And that's some universal thing that in algebraic geometry you just sort of learn how to do. And you can tell exactly the same story I did, except with stacks over R. But the advantage in stacks over R, so for example, you can build all these fiber products, and what you end up with are not categories. They're not like just categories. They're better than categories. They're categories where the entire construction. So you end up with in a world where, for instance, something like board NG is better than a category. It has a real algebraic structure. I mean that you can have real algebraic families of objects and not just homotopical families of objects. So the advantage of doing that is that in regular old sets or spaces, if you have a torsor for a group, you can pick a point and that trivializes the torsor. But if you're in algebraic geometry, in algebraic geometry, this group Z mod 2 that showed up on that board has, in some sense, where the Z mod 2 torsor as a torsor has actually two different versions. So in algebraic geometry, the word torsor means something that kind of locally looks like the object that you have. So namely, the two real forms are you can take just regular old Z mod 2 and multiply it by just the real point. And then it's a Z mod 2 module, so this reflects the two things. Here's the Z mod 2 action. And there's another one, which is the complex numbers. And you can act on it by complex conjugation. And that's a sort of well-known phenomenon. You're supposed to think of this as being like the trivial bundle over spec R. And you're supposed to think of spec C. So here's spec R times plus minus. And you're supposed to think of spec C as being more like a connected double cover mapping down to spec R. That's the pictures that they draw in algebraic geometry. I'm not sure how to make those pictures precise. That's what people draw. Where am I going? Right. So I didn't tell you what field I wanted to work over. I just said vect. But I think that you should work over vect R. I think you should work with real vector spaces. So if I decided that, if I decided my target was real vector spaces or a higher categorical version of that, then oriented field theories would be field theories with real partition functions. Unoriented field theories would be field theories with real partition functions. I'd have real Hilbert spaces, well, not Hilbert spaces, real vector spaces, that kind of stuff.
So you want to interpret the complex conjugation as a Galois.
Exactly.
And work with the
state. Absolutely. The notion of orientation is something that makes sense just in pure homotopy theory. I could take oriented field theories valued in any target. If my target is real vector spaces, then absolutely the partition functions will be real.
So you have punchline. Is unitary space the physics separate or point the continuity of the other?
Well, I should probably say, to make this fully precise, I should say unitary and spin statistics.
Unitary is a condition for that to be true.
Yeah, I'm sort of only caring about the stable situation for the purposes of my talk. There's more interesting things you can tell in any particular dimension, but I'm just interested in sort of what goes on in every dimension. So in any case, the point is you could do the following. You can decide if you want to set your local structure to be the thing, to be the unique local structure, so that Z of a point is spec C with its complex conjugation action. That's an element of stacks over R with ON symmetry. And then you can build a quantum a local structure valued in stacks over R out of that data. And now you can unpack what you get. So what are G-structured field theories, QFTs, and now I want to sort of talk about real vector spaces. Everything's over R. I mean, I don't know where to put the N. N-dimensional vector spaces, but over R. Just over R all the time. Well, I'm not going to, yes? So G of an N-manifold is going to be, in this case, empty if N is non-orientable. And if N is orientable, it's just spec C times the set of orientations modulo the total Galois, the total Z mod 2 action. Exactly. That's exactly what this does. So right, so the whole point here, as I just said, so G of a manifold is the orientations on N times spec C, and then I just force complex conjugation to be the same as orientation reversal. So when you unpack this, what do you get? Well, let me just look at like in dimension 1 where I can actually do things to give you the intuition. So when N is 1, well, G of a point, that's the complex, no, that's spec C, so that's a complex point. So Z of a point has to be a vector bundle over spec C. Vector bundles over spec C are complex vector bundles. Complex vector space. Except that, so then I should have said Z of the positive, well, Z of a point is here. And somehow what I've done is I've built it. So now what you could do is you could look at say, so normally in field theory, it's the cups and caps that give you pairings on vector spaces. So you can look at something like the cap operator, and you can figure out that this is spec C mapping to spec, if you restrict the number of orientations on this, or the number of this guy's on this, you get spec C times spec C over spec R. But the map is not the diagonal map. It's kind of an anti-diagonal map. So it sends lambda to sort of lambda bar. And when you unpack what that does is it gives you a complex vector space with a Hermitian inner product. So a non-degenerate sesquilinear inner product. I don't know how to get positivity into the game, Dan. I just can't find it. OK, I have 5 minutes. So now let me try to do the whole second row of this. OK, so what was the punchline for this row? The punchline was that orientations was a God-given thing. If you ask this story but only know about kind of homotopy zero types, then the only thing you can do with the orthogonal group is take a set of connected components. That's a Z mod 2. So that's why orientations was God-given if you decided to work with homotopy zero types. And unitarity is God-given because C is the algebraic closure of R. So that's why this is the only other Z mod 2 torsor. And the Galois group is the same Z mod 2. Z mod 2 only has one way of being isomorphic to itself. So now let me do exactly the same thing. I shouldn't even erase this much. So if you take the orthogonal group, and if maybe I'm just going to be stable, n is at least 3, and you can map it not to the fundamental to the class of connected components, but to its fundamental one type. This guy you can compute is, well, there's the still Z mod 2 of components, and then you can rotate 360 degrees. And that gives you a class in degree and degree 1. This was a nice computation. And so spin theories are the ones where spin of a point is that space as a torsor. I mean, the action is just this action. Okay, I'm in homotopy one type, so I'm in sort of one categories. I'm in groupoid, so let me work with categories. So rather than working with R, every field, every ring can be faithfully encoded in terms of its category of just, this is not higher categories at all. This is just the category of vector spaces as a symmetric monoidal category. You can exactly copy the words that you said to define what algebraic closure meant. And you can compute the, well, you can write down the definition, and then it's a theorem of Deligne's. He didn't say it this way, but it's essentially a theorem of Deligne's that the algebraic closure in symmetric monoidal categories, I need a bunch of like words like linear and finite, finite abelian, that kind of word. So Pasha knows how to fill in all those words. The algebraic closure in symmetric monoidal categories of vect R is not vect C, which would be the natural encoding of the complex numbers, but is instead super vect C. And moreover, this extension is Galois. The extension is Galois with Galois group. The same thing.
What if we take any field?
So any field of characteristic 0, the algebraic closure is super vector over the algebraic closure of the field. In characteristic P, I believe that's what you and your student are working on. In characteristic P, I believe that the question of what the algebraic closure is what you guys are working on right now. So you're the expert. Basically the meaning of being an algebraic closure is that you're algebraically closed if you don't have any non-trivial extensions, which means that you put down any kind of finite type ring, and that has a map back to your algebraic closure. And so if you unpack what that means in symmetric monoidal categories, I'm saying that every symmetric monoidal category has a functor of symmetric monoidal categories to supervect. And that's Deligne's theorem in categories tensorialis.
Can I talk a bit? The superline is a square root of the trivial thing that I need to add on somehow.
This is a kind of the unique case after taking subfields, I guess. If you have a field whose algebraic closure is finite extension of it, then the index will be 2. It's not 1, and it's basically going to do this. C over R is 2. So there is no such examples for 3, 4, and so on. So. That's why we don't have footer vector spaces for dimension 3, 4, right?
So I don't know. I haven't figured out why this is really true. For me, this is just some facts about kind of projective representations of permutation groups. And
so if you do it for any other case where the index is degree is infinite, then you will get some kind of infinite.
Yeah.
If you do it for Q, you get absolute downward compensation.
So if you get do it for
well,
Q, what will
I don't know what the extension would be.
Is it
but
absolute downward group product of Q? Because he said it was a downward group part of your field.
Yeah. But does that somehow
fundamental group void if they're orthogonal group over the rations.
I have no idea how to do this in any field other than R. R is where both Bott and Zaline told me what to do in their papers. Like, over any other field, I don't know what to do. But I should end, so let me just say that you can write down, you can ask. So what this tells you is that in some sort of categorified stacks, in some worlds of categorified stacks on the site of R linear symmetric monoidal categories, this guy, the fundamental groupoid of Z mod 2, has a canonical torsor, namely the stack represented by supervect over C. And the two actions, this Z mod 2 is just complex conjugation, and this B Z mod 2 is the minus 1 of the fermion count. And so now you can unpack, what does it mean to be what does it mean to have this as your local structure? So you can put down the local structure. You can say, well, so you can study field theories, QFTs, with local structure such that Z, G of a point is this torsor. With this ON action.
So I say something like you said before, like in structures of this thing, what around?
Yep. Computer once and for all. And what you find out is you precisely find spin field theories, QFTs, valued in supervect, valued in supercategories. Supervector spaces, supercategories, superland, in complex superland. With unitarity and spin statistics. And so this is my answer for why unitarity and spin statistics are natural from the point of view of topology, is that they come from studying an absolutely canonical torsor. I would feel better if, as I moved higher in the category theory, I could continue to match up the homotopy types. I can't do that computation, so I don't know if this is just a coincidence. There are many, many things in homotopy theory that start Z mod 2, Z mod 2. And I don't know if this is just one of those coincidences or if this is a fundamental thing. Maybe I want to close that this is a reason. From a mathematics point of view, the spin statistics theorem is not a theorem in the sense of mathematics, because, for example, you could take there's an oriented two-dimensional superfield theory whose value on a point is Clif 2. And if I want to make that so Clif 2 is complex equivalent to Clif 0, but it's not, say, unitarily equivalent. So there's a unitary superfield theory whose value on a point is Clif 2. That's not equivalent to any bosonic theory. So spin statistics is not like a theorem about every field theory, but it's a theorem about many field theories. And this is a reason why it appears in many field theories. So thank you.
So you say there's a field theory with a fermion, but the fermion do not have a half speed.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, there in two dimensions, I know one.
But
yeah.
In hierarchy, it's about in three parts.
Well, I don't know any examples in hierarchy.
Maybe not positive unitary.
Okay, I should say, I don't understand positivity. I certainly don't understand how to say positive really for fermions. There's certainly a theory where you take, you assign to the point Clif 2, where you give both the generators, you make both the generators real, for example. And give it that Galois action, that sort of Sesquilinear action, and then that guy makes sense as an oriented theory. I just don't know how to even ask whether that's a positive thing.
So the two dimension and three dimensions is different. In two dimensions, there is a way to shift so-called the spin of a particle arbitrarily.
Yeah, so maybe that's all this is.
2D spin, not really
right.
But the three dimension seems
and that
so looks like to get a violation of spin statistics in three dimensions is harder. So I wonder from your structure whether you see the distinction whether three plus one dimension.
Yeah. So no, I mean, there's absolutely a question that's worth that I don't know the answer to. It's a well-posed mathematical problem to study, say, unoriented field theories valued in supervector spaces in which you don't take spin statistics. You just take functors from unoriented bordisms to super categories.
I see. So this works in that dimension.
That's a perfectly well-defined mathematics problem. Now, it might be that every such functor corresponds to a spin statistics functor. It might be that every such functor actually factors through bosonic vector spaces. I don't know how to, I don't have a guess as to the answers to those questions. And in which case, if you could prove something like that, that would be a stronger spin statistics theorem. But the best I can prove is that it's like, there at least spin statistics is kind of like homotopy theory gives it to you as a sort of important thing.
So one comment is there's even a one-dimensional field theory that attaches, say, a non-spin theory, that attaches to a point, the odd line.
Sure.
And that violates positivity because the circle has the number of minus one attached.
Okay.
So that's ruled out by positivity.
Okay.
But what are you calling spin statistics precisely?
Sorry, for me, what I'm calling spin statistics is the only thing I know how to call spin statistics is that if I feed in a theory with where I sort of know a superstructure of spin structure, so if I think of it this way. So anyway, for me, what I'm calling spin statistics is a theory that takes in spin manifolds and outputs super objects, but has the special property that if you sort of do the odd spin on a cylinder, that's the same as doing minus one to the f.
So any spin manifold has a diffeomorphism, which is the identity on points, but the spin structure. It's
that's right.
The central element of spin
right.
Structure.
And so I'm asking to identify that Z mod 2 with this Z mod 2. Yeah. And I'm asking for that sort of on things with boundary as well. So the point is that kind of that's a at least from the point of view of kind of pure category theory, a disconnected question from which things braid with themselves with positive sign and which braid with themselves with negative sign. Like in the language of category theory, the category of supervector spaces admits two different pivotal structures. And somehow in spin statistics, is some sort of identification of those. So, well, my fantasy is that there's that you could keep doing this, and in the sense, keep doing what do I mean? That you could keep going to sort of symmetric monoidal bicategories, symmetric monoidal tricategories, and so on, and in that way compute sort of an infinite Eightall homotopy type of spec R, and that it will exactly match the classifying space of O(n) or of O infinity of O infinity. That's I think possibly too optimistic. Most algebraic topologists, when I tell them this to them, say, "Oh, it must be the sphere spectrum."
Makes me think of Dan's
Right, so I wanted to know if Dan was willing to speculate.
No, Dan's not willing to speculate, but in a different fantasy direction. So you seem to say that you want to start with the reals and get the complexes by imposing the idea of going to an algebraic closure.
Absolutely.
And this higher notion of algebraic closure gets us to super vector spaces and so on. I think in quantum mechanics, the usual reason to go to complex numbers has to do with interference experiments. Yeah. Why should algebraic closure enter into quantum mechanics?
That's in my paper. This is my paper. I wrote the
computer. Okay, then you should read his paper. I would say that once you've decided that you're allowing families parameterized by real algebraic varieties, then any real algebraic variety just sort of shows up in that, because spec C is an example of something parameterized by real algebraic varieties. I want to emphasize that in regular old quantum mechanics, that's not a complex linear thing. I mean, the fact that you have complex conjugation is, of course, fundamental in the theory of quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics is over R. It's just that kind of to do one category theory over R, you need to work like the basic theory of Galois theory is that one category theory over R is the same as Galois equivariant one category theory over C. So quantum mechanics is some part of one category theory over R, but when I talk about like Hermitian structures and so on, all I'm doing is I'm just going through that usual dictionary to talk about Galois equivariant things over C. So that's why I see it. I just think that as soon as you have algebraic families, you get complex numbers.
Okay, any more questions?
So can you generalize this complex number to the superposition?
So the kind of all the time my local structures were taking place in a kind of non-quantum world. I'm always having kind of I'm always going to have commutative objects. The division algebras do show up in various ways, and I don't know. It's hard to count. Sometimes you sort of have things that show up in seemingly different ways, and you find out that they're the same. And sometimes you think that they're the same, and you find out that they're different. But one nice example of this is that there's two different pin structures. So you can play the same game with other things. Dan told us about Dan reminded us that there are two different local structures of having a pin structure. So you can study pin structures, and both pin plus of a point and pin minus of a point are both BZ mod 2s, but with different O(n) actions. So you can tell them apart that way. And the corresponding torsors, the corresponding categorified torsors, well, for one of them, and I never know which is which. I mean, I do if you use my conventions, but I think half of people might use the opposite convention. So for one of them, you just get spec of the real supervector spaces. For the other one, real supervector spaces has two different real forms. There's a sort of what might be called supervect over the quaternions. And so they do appear. I'm happy to tell you what that category is if you want. Exactly. OK, great. That's what I thought. But I was confused on, oh no, Anton explained this for me. You had Wick rotated somewhere in your table. Great. So yes, I think that that's how it matches up in the left to right order that I gave it.
Okay, any more questions?
let's take this big one step off.